Hi, everyone. Welcome to Beauty and the Brain, the podcast where we discuss all things aesthetics. I'm your co-host, Dr. Chris Crowley.
And I'm Jerry Drinkard, family nurse practitioner. And together, Chris and I own Skin and Tonic, med spa that's located here in Pace, Florida. And today we're joined not by Allie, which we normally are, but instead we're joined by Miss Chloe. Chloe with a K is joining us for the podcast today. We're talking about something that's a little different than what we usually do on the podcast, and something that's a little bit raw, a little bit fresh. We're going to talk about, are you prepared to get fired, or how does it feel getting fired?
I know. It's something that many of you guys may have experienced. If not, you probably know someone that has experienced this. And really, I think the bigger topic is the financial security around that, the financial insecurity and the worry and the doubt that that creates, and how that impacts some of the things that we do. We're talking about it because I recently got fired. That's what brought this topic up. But it's interesting because also in this business that we're in the aesthetic business, it's one of the first things that people may cut with their spending. And so as we talk to our patients about this and our clients, and we look at some of the data coming out of the industry, it's interesting what we thought about people cutting this in expense really didn't necessarily turn out to be true. We found that people would rather go without some of their basic necessities than to skip their Botox appointment. Like I said, let's just start with me getting fired recently.
Let's clarify you getting fired. Like, I didn't fire you from Skin and Tonic. You got fired from your anesthesia position.
Correct.
Right? Because some people may not realize exactly all the hats you wear. Chris has a lot of jobs.
Yeah. And so this wasn't me individually. It was us as a group. And so really, Jerry knows it was quite a shock. So this has been I'm board certified anesthesia critical care provider, have worked in the ICU and still maintained an active practice there. Didn't work a lot, only one or two shifts a month here and there, but really thought that was very secure and always used that. We had great benefits, great retirement. I worked with an amazing group of people that I really enjoyed being part of. And one morning we got a notice the night before that there was an operational meeting the next morning. The next morning, at the operational meeting, the operational update or change that we were informed of was that our group no longer would have the contract to provide those services, and that we were given a 90-day notice. And all of a sudden, that meant everything was changing. And so our benefit packages, where our insurance were, who employed us, would we get a job? And so we were reassured that we would all be offered positions with a new company or some version of that. And we could be reemployed, but it was not at all in the same manner or the job frame that we had worked in for many years. It was interesting because we've had guests on here before and they talk about how these things change the trajectory of what they do with the rest of their life. And for me, it was a shock and it really caused a lot of stress. And so we know that change of job, move, divorce, all those are like major life stressors. And I think people from the outside looking in would think that, oh, it shouldn't be stressful because you have multiple other jobs. So we have Skin and Tonic, which does very well. I have a coaching and consulting company. I'm the CMO for a couple of companies. And so we have multiple income streams. And so that didn't seem like a big deal, but I can tell you it caused a lot of stress and a lot of worry. And it made me think, what would I give up? What is it that we would have to cut out if we had certain restrictions because of budget? And really, when it gets to the aesthetics care, to me, that's one of the areas that would seem to go first. And I think when we look in this hierarchy of our needs, definitely our food, water, shelter, that sort of stuff comes first. But in terms of like other luxuries, there are other things that I would give up before I would give up my aesthetic treatments. And so that's really kind of what got us talking about this episode, the show, got us looking more reflectively at Skin and Tonic, the patients that see us, the price points, the budgets, and all the things that we offer in there. And really, I think the point of us having this discussion for our listeners is to kind of prompt them and have them think, are you as secure as you think you are in your job? And have you done things to prepare yourself financially for a secure future, regardless if that company changes their position or changes your role?
I think a lot of times when people get fired, they may realize, like, I'm not doing a good job, I'm not meeting my goals, I'm not doing this, that, or the other. But in a situation like this, like, there really was, it was something that was out of the control of the employees of the group. And so, you know, you were doing a good job. You were fulfilling your roles that you were hired to do. You had, you know, you didn't have subpar service to the company. And so you felt like everything was going like it should in that role. And then to be hit with something like this really catches you like off guard. We're fortunate that we do have things that we can cut out. And we've even talked about some of the things that we'll do differently or may need to do differently.
I think this is fascinating, though. That's not part of the topic, but we don't argue a lot, but we frequently have disagreements over this one particular issue because we operate from two very different points of view. And Jerry's take on this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but your take is cut things out always. Mm-hmm. And my take is, how do I build additional revenue? So I don't ever think about like, what do we cut? We need to find more, not cut and save less. But I think the reality is you got to be somewhere in the middle. And I think
you have to do both, because to create additional revenue does take time. To cut things that are luxury, like the dogs going to the groomer as frequently as they do, or someone to help with things around the house and things like that, I think are things that I can do to immediately contribute to stop. And so I think about, what can I do to stop the bleed of money that goes out faster than it comes in sometimes. Thankfully, we have that balance, because Chris, like, you do have a knack for generating revenue streams, and I have a knack for cutting out some of the spending. So
yeah, and I think that's important to consider both. But I also think it's important for our clients, the listeners, other providers out there that are looking at starting up their clinic and starting their aesthetic practice, to think about how they're building these separate revenue streams that they control. Mm-hmm. Because then it's up to them. It's not up to a company that you work for or someone else that's going to have control of your future. Because ultimately, like you said, regardless of doing a good job, performance, any of those other metrics that we would traditionally look at, if that company goes out of business, if they're bought by a larger company, there's all those sorts of things that can occur. You are not in control of that situation. But sometimes that forces you to look and see what other things that you have built for yourself. So that door is going to close, but have you built other doors that you can now open and pursue those pathways? And so I think that it gets into multiple things that we could really do two or three or four episodes from this, because how do you build that financial independence? And so savings is one of them. So cutting out and doing things that you've talked about, where you can cut maybe some luxury expenses to save and prepare for that rainy day. That would be your first line of defense. But for the aesthetic practice owners, it's really, in my mind, finding ways to scale their practice and grow their practice, so it has its own independent revenue stream that can sustain you regardless of what goes on with those other jobs. And fortunately, like I said, that's what we've done here at Skin and Tonic. So I only talk about it because it did evoke all those emotions that I didn't think I would have, because I have talked about leaving this for many, many years and really only worked very minimal anyway. So I would have also thought it wouldn't have been a big deal, like, no big deal, this is what we plan on doing. But it's created a lot of worry about how do we plan for these things in the future. So I think for those that are starting up practices or businesses, it's great to think about how you're controlling that and how are you scaling and growing it. And that's really the important part, is knowing those metrics and those numbers. So it's not just a little bit of a vacation fund or extra money in an account, but it truly is a sustainable business, and you have a growth plan so that you're building these exit pathways for yourself. And that doesn't mean at some point you may not sell that business, but you've built it in a way that's sustainable for you to support a lifestyle that you want.
Well, sustaining the lifestyle that you want, and not only that, but meeting the basic needs. Like, if you did lose your job tomorrow, for the listeners, like, how long could you pay your bills? How are you going to survive in the interim between the end of this job and the beginning of the next job? And, you know, do you have savings? Do you spend that savings? Do you take a job of less paid just to kind of get by and bridge that? There's so many questions, and it does evoke like all sorts of feelings that you really aren't prepared for at that time. You don't expect when something like this kind of comes out of the blue. And so that kind of goes back to what you were talking about having other revenue streams, having savings, an emergency fund. You know, there's all sorts of numbers about you should have enough money saved to pay X number of months of your bills. But we also know that a lot of us have lived from paycheck to paycheck, and that's a lot easier said than done.
As we're talking about this, one of the interesting things that, you know, Sierra brought up, so we were talking about what people do to prepare for these things, but I think a lot of people prepare for vacations more than they prepare for career disruption. And I think that, one of the more dangerous places to be is comfortable and secure without thinking that this could happen to you or without having a backup plan. So unfortunately, like in this field, in this profession, it happens more often than we think. So it's been interesting. A lot of people feel shame and embarrassment, disappointment, all these emotions that are around that losing a job, which may or may not be anything to do with them personally. And so I chose to share it openly. I chose to address this. I actually addressed this to a group of people the day after it happened. Yeah, it sounds shocking when I say I got fired, and immediately the question, people's like, well, what did you do? And then, you know, when we follow up and tell the story, it's not me individually, it's a whole group losing a contract. But I think there are people that are fired individually, and there's all sorts of like emotions around this, and they've planned for their vacations. They'll plan ahead for that, but they've never thought about a career disruption of some sort. And it's interesting, probably I've shared at least six stories in the last week of people who have been impacted in a similar fashion, and some of them through a change in leadership within their company, and there was they didn't align with the new leadership and their vision. Unfortunately, people who are in leadership roles at some of these facilities and at some of these corporations are the first to go, because when there's a change in companies, they want to get rid of the leadership, because that's one of the, they don't want any old attitudes coming in. They don't want barriers to their entry. So some of those people who were the best in their jobs and actually identified as leaders to that particular company may be the first to go when a new company comes into place. I've shared this with providers who have literally come in and had their, not just their job loss, but the whole, they'll be offered to rehire at a fraction of the rate. And so they do it for like a money savings. I've talked to people who have literally had their jobs disrupted, their careers disrupted mid-career for medical reasons that they thought they couldn't be fired for. And it was like, we thought this was a protected reason or a protected class, and only to find out later on that they were wrong with their interpretation. There's been, you know, lifestyle disagreements with management. But in many of those cases, the people I've talked to have went on to do better things, things that they didn't envision, things they didn't imagine. And we talked to a guest on the podcast a while back, and she was a vice president, a senior vice president at a chemical engineering company. Big role, thought she was in line to be the next president, and showed up at a conference where she was there on a work-related trip, and only to find out her room had not been reserved. And when she called to figure out what the reservation was, they said, you no longer have a job. So imagine that. You're like, you know, later in life, you're secure in your position, you're in a leadership role, and nobody even tells you until you find out and you show up somewhere and you don't have a room. And they're like, well, sorry, you no longer have a job either. And so all of these individuals that I've talked to, they went on to different careers. She's has her whole, basically a retreat planning company now, successful, happier than she's ever been. I know school administrators, I know people in the healthcare industry that's went on and started additional groups. And so, you know, the key is in many of those situations, people go to find something, but it is that hard reality they have to face. And it's those first few days that are rough for them when they hear that news. And so I want people to think about it beforehand. And so again, for me, it was easier for me to embrace it, to talk about it, to share it. And by sharing it, more people have reached out to me and shared similar stories and said, this is what we've went through. But in most circumstances, they hadn't planned for any sort of exit. There was no thought process that went into that. And so regardless if it's been in healthcare, education, and in retail, or in her case, in an engineering job, they weren't really thinking in that direction and prepared for it. And so what can you do today to start preparing for this? And I, like, literally, whether that is savings, I don't say that everybody's an entrepreneur. Not everybody needs to go out and start a business. But if you are starting a business, are you doing it in a very thoughtful way that will sustain you? And so I believe that instead of planning just for vacation funds, we need to start our mindset and start thinking about how would we prepare for a career disruption should it occur.
when you start thinking about changing careers, and like, you're fortunate in that your skill set is very transferable. You could leave anesthesia, the hospital you're at currently, and go to the next hospital next door, and anesthesia is very much the same. But I think the other thing to think about it, and how you put an extra spin on it, is even though you were there doing anesthesia and critical care, learned a whole new skill set of skills that can be used in other ways outside of medicine. And by outside of medicine, I mean you learn new leadership skills, the organizational skills. You were just talking about the engineer that is now doing like travel planning and or resort plans, or I forget exactly.
Retreat planning.
And so from her skill set from when she was doing engineering at a high level, she learned all these organizational skills and how to plan these events. And so even though she's not in the same exact role, she did take things she had learned from that role and transferred it to something that's very profitable, which is something I think that fortunately you had already started with the Dr. Crowley coaching and mentoring thing. So there are a lot of different ways out there to use this to your benefit.
Well, because I think that, you know, we talk about like redundant systems. And so anytime you talk about systems-based processes, whether we're talking about a medication error or if you're looking at airline safety, we can apply this over and over into different industries and look that if there's multiple redundant systems, meaning like three or four or five things have to fail for something to go catastrophic and really wrong, the more those redundant systems we build, the less likely we're going to have a catastrophic failure. But if you have one thing and that one thing is critical and that one thing breaks, that's your one point of failure, that is your weakest link. Because if anything happens to that one thing, and that's what we do in our personal lives and in a lot of our businesses, we don't look at redundant systems. So we, you know, put all of our eggs in one basket, or we only have one income stream. And that is the reality for most people. I get that. And I'm not saying it's not, but whether that income stream is another job, another skill set. So like you said, you're learning new skills so that you have a different skill set, but you're working on building that leverage that will help you better yourself and potentially better your life at some point if you need it. And the best time to build that leverage is at a time you don't need it, because we are now building either multiple income streams or different pathways. And that could literally be investments in different investment vehicles, funds. So starting a savings account, even putting that in an interest-bearing savings account, so you're putting some money aside of that to prepare for that career disruption. And then over time, having that build up as you're learning new skill sets. But it literally is a way to kind of make redundant systems in your life, so you're not dependent so much on that one. So when there is a failure or a change in that, that goes away. And like I said, I get, like, you know, I realize that we're fortunate enough to sit from this position and talk to everyone owning a business and having a coaching company and having other income streams. And so it was like, yes, we did those things. And so now we can pivot and we can say, now let's move in this direction and let's put more into this particular business. But I really would like more people to think about it, because from teachers, firefighters, nurses, physicians, this can happen across the board, that we can see these things occur when we're at the mercy of bigger corporations. And that's just a fact of life that we need to deal with.
Well, I think it's important to know, like, your job can be taken away, but your skill set, the relationships you build with people, the things that you learn yourself, those sort of things can't be taken away. So it's important to, whatever role you're in, whatever job you're at, to build yourself, not just to build the role you're in.
So we certainly don't want people cutting out their aesthetic services. And that's really what got us all on this. And should we even talk about it on here, is like, when things like this change, will people cut this out? And it was interesting for us talking to some of the patients and also looking at some of the industry data. People don't want to cut out their aesthetic services as much as you would think, because the thought process is that'll be one of the first to go. But in reality, people who love their aesthetic services will hang on to that, and they're going to look for ways to continue to get that. So while I certainly don't want you cutting that out, I want you guys to also be simultaneously thinking about ways that you can, you know, make yourself more fireproof. Is that it? Firing proof? We don't want you.
Firing proof.
Firing proof. Because it's not really fireproof. But yeah, it's like, you know, I want you to think about ways that you can design multiple different streams or make your skill set so valuable that you have other ways that you can pivot should these changes occur in your life. Jerry, what have you done to make yourself firing proof?
I built my personality on the Beauty and the Brain podcast.
I love it. But that is one of our tips, is build a personal brand.
So if tomorrow I'm unable to inject, I'll sit here and talk.
He'll sit here and talk to you guys. Love that. But we have, and so you don't think about it because you get a salary as doing your actual day-to-day work and doing injectables and performing the procedures, but also you are a business owner. And so if something happened and you couldn't do it, we could hire other injectors and you could.
We do that. We also have like the revenue stream from teaching and education of others. There are several different things that we do. It'd be hard to replace my job monetarily for one, but it'd be really hard to find something else that I enjoyed that much. And so to be fired from a job that I was really passionate about would probably be devastating initially, even if it wasn't monetarily.
So definitely, I think that's it. And it's a blow to, certainly a blow to your ego, but if it's something you absolutely love, I also don't think it necessarily means you have to do a total shift from that career. So it's like, what have you done as an individual to kind of make yourself more desirable than to work for other things in that industry? So yeah, I mean, because you truly love your patients and interacting with them, I think we talk about this a lot. If you wanted to, if you had to mimic or you try to do my schedule, what would you say about that?
I would hate doing it.
But you also know that if I had to like be there and inject the number of patients on a consistent basis that you do, I also wouldn't like that. And so for both of us, we have parts of things that we absolutely love, but you building your injection skills, continuing to learn new techniques, you're staying on the cutting edge of this, which would make you a desirable provider in any aesthetic practice. So regardless, if we lost this business today, I think you've built your skill set to a point that you could continue to do what you love. And so we don't think about it like that because we're doing our own.
Right.
But we're continuing to get education. We're continuing to try to learn the best that we can about things that we're passionate about. And so I love injecting. I love training. I love teaching. And so I've been able to take that and develop it into its own different line of coaching and consulting. But you love injecting. You absolutely love being with your patients and talking to them. So what you've done is continue to improve your skills you go conferences all the time. We have several coming up in the next few months that we're going to be traveling to so you can learn the newest techniques. So I think that's the other thing for people to think about is you can love what you do. And when we say think about ways to kind of build a backup plan, it could be education in more of the things that you're already doing so you're better at it and you have a bigger skill set that would make you desirable for other people to hire. Okay, guys, thank you so much for tuning in for another episode of Beauty in the Brain. We look forward to seeing you next week.
We'll see you soon.